What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another great episode of The Stoop, where we talk hoops, hoops, and more hoops. I'm your guy, TJ. Man, I just want to say thank you to each and every one of you guys who've been liking, sharing, and subscribing the podcast on all the platforms. Man, you can catch us on our YouTube shows, as well as all the podcasts from Apple to Google to Stitcher to TuneIn, iHeart, and so much more. So we want to say thank you to you guys. First and foremost, we got to shout out our sponsors for the show. We're going to start with Yave Tequila. Big shout out to our guys, Joe and Ron, for taking care of us. You can find us right here in the plain, the mango and the habanero, aka the jalapeno. Get you some. Spring and summer's coming real soon. And last but certainly not least, you got your league coming up this summer. Whether it's an AAU tournament, whether it's a church league, you see it right there. We got our authentic logo put right into the ball. All you got to do is give a shout out to our guys at 24/7 Basketball, 24/7 Hoops. Thank you, Mr. Morrison. We really appreciate it. Now you know what I got to do, man. I got to say what's up to my player partner, my co-host, my brother from another, Kev P. Say what's up to the people, bro.
I'm just happy to be here. You already know.
I'm excited about this one. So this natural-born Florida boy made a real name for himself in Houston, Texas. That's Houston, Texas, by the way. And ladies and gentlemen, he's also a Mr. Basketball player. One of those things that's rarity, as well as a McDonald's All-American. He was able to go ahead and be one of those guys to lead the way and continue in that legacy at Cameron Indoor Stadium as a Duke Blue Devil. Then from there, he was able to put on one of these on draft night to become an LA Clipper and start his professional journey. And from there, ladies and gentlemen, he's had an international career that spanned over 10 seasons. He's been a three-time champion, a finals MVP, and guess what? He's on the stoop with us right now. Ladies and gentlemen, we present to you Mr. Daniel Ewing. Mr. Ewing.
Fellas, how you doing, man? Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being a part of the show today. So let me start with this question. Who actually put the basketball first into your hand, may I ask?
Man, that's tough. I have to say probably my brothers. One of my brothers for sure. I have two older brothers, man, that I used to follow around and try to model myself after, being that they were so much older than me. So definitely one of those guys for sure put the ball in my hands.
Definitely, definitely. So at what age or what time frame maybe was a grade, Mr. Ewing, that you thought that, you know, maybe I could really do something with the sport. Maybe I could really be a ball player here.
Honestly, man, I always dreamed of being a professional athlete since the time I was probably like in the second grade. But when it really started hitting me, when everybody, you know, I really started knowing for sure that I was good, was probably around seventh, eighth grade.
Okay. All right, Kev.
I want to skip ahead real quick to high school years, and then you did some wonderful things and ended up playing in the McDonald's All-American game in 2001. You helped, you played a pivotal role and helping the West bounce back from a 15-point deficit at halftime. I'm sure you guys all talked it over in the locker room, but what was it in your particular mindset going into that second half that kind of changed things up?
Man, you taking it way back. You know, honestly, bro, I just think, you know, we kind of, you know, that was the first time a lot of those guys that played together, you know, so I think we kind of just made the adjustments of, you know, just understanding what it was going to take to win the game. You know, at McDonald's all the games, also you want to entertain, but also at the end of the day, when it really comes down to it, you also want to win or have a chance to win. And I think that's what, after halftime, that's the kind of adjustments we made. Like, hey, man, let's give ourselves a real chance to win this game. These guys not that much better than us. The game shouldn't be this far apart right now. So I just think we tightened it up a little bit and turned it up.
Okay, cool. I want to fast forward now. TJ, before I do that, did you have something that you wanted to ask him specifically about his earlier years in Duke? Because I want to ask him specifically about that senior year.
I actually got one before he even gets there.
Go ahead.
We're talking Shaquille O'Neal. We're talking Jason Sasser. We're talking Kendrick Perkins. We're talking yourself as Mr. Basketballs of Texas, and the list is extensive. Why do you think, you know, Mr. Ewing, Texas, in terms of locale, when we look at our country, we talk Cali, we talk New York. Why is Texas oftentimes slept on of not being a basketball powerhouse when they have put in so many different basketball players and great talent over the years?
Honestly, it's because, I mean, this is, football is king here.
Right.
And so it's hard to overcome that, even though, like you said, we put out an abundance of, you know, top high school athletes, mm-hmm. Abundance of top high, you know, pro athletes as well in the NBA level. But football is going to always be king here. So I think that's the biggest the biggest reason why Texas gets slept on. And outside of that, it's probably because we don't have a lot of powerhouse schools with like a tradition, like let's say like a Rice up in the, you know, up in the East Coast, or you know, like a St. Anthony's. We don't have those powerhouse schools like that in Texas that has that tradition. That, well, we don't have a lot. I don't say we don't have any, but we don't have a lot that puts out high caliber players of that nature and NBA talent that that'll keep that buzz coming in like that.
Definitely. One more question for you though, with that same line. Did you ever give a nod at the gridiron? And it was basketball always your thing, or did you try to play other sports as well?
No, man. Of course, like I said, I grew up here. So and
right.
Like I said, naturally, I'm from Florida. So I'm from two football states already. So so yeah, I grew up playing both sports. Okay. Play a little bit of baseball too, but I grew up playing both basketball and football. And you know, the story is you let my peers tell it. Some people thought I was better at football. So
okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Definitely.
What position, just out of curiosity?
Quarterback.
Okay.
You're a floor general, so that makes sense. Absolutely, that makes sense. What's up, Kev? Go ahead.
All right, speaking of being a floor general, senior year at Duke, early on, it was shaping up to be a tough one. Coach K at the time was kind of rumored to be entertaining a contract to go to the NBA. Of course, he turned it down, obviously. Then the team lost Chris Duhon, Luol Deng, Sean Livingston. They all went on, as we know, to play in the NBA. You still had a solid team, but expectations obviously were not the same. And you had your best season that year. And the team went on to exceed expectations and win the ACC tournament. How gratifying was that to be able to pull that off despite having lose such caliber?
I don't know if gratifying is the right word. Like I said, I mean, at Duke, I won the ACC tournament every year but one year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my junior year, which probably one of the better teams that I was on. We just, you know, we slipped up and lost that game.
Right.
So, but the expectations are to win those type of games and to win, be in championships and to play in the Final Fours and Elite Eight. So, I mean, even though, like you said, we lost a lot of talent that year. Luol left early. Chris Duhon graduated. Sean Livingston decided to skip college altogether and go straight to the NBA. We still, like I said, we still had a solid group and we still had enough talent to get it done. And so me personally, like that was just what was expected from us. So like I said, I gratify wouldn't be the great word, but I mean, it's always good. And it always feels good, you know, to get your wins and to win sometimes and win championships of some caliber. So it was definitely gratifying, but like I said, that was the expectations all along.
All right. Well, you led that particular ACC tournament in assists, and you played well in the championship game as well, 15 points, 4 assists, just so people know. But it was a tightly contested game, and somewhere down the line, obviously, we know that you ended up fouling out. What was your first thought at that moment? Like, did you feel like you let them down, or did you still think, all right, we got this down in the bag? What was your thoughts in that moment? Because it's critical.
Right. So I fouled out with probably, like, man, with a lot of time to go in the game, like almost 10 minutes, I think. So it was, you know, still a lot of game to be played when I fouled out. Just a tough situation. I picked up some, you know, some so-so calls early on in the game. Then the last foul actually that I picked up, they called a charge on me. But I mean, it was tough because the guy behind me, whoever it was, I forget who it was. If we was playing Georgia Tech, so I forget if it was Jerry Jack or Will Byam or one of those guys. But they kind of nudged me in the back, which made me lose. Be out of control, but the referee didn't see that. And so, right. You know, like I said, that was a tough situation for me. So man, yeah, I was really pissed that, you know, my last year playing this, I know this is my last chance of playing for ACC tournament championship. So not to be able to finish the game on the court, you know, I was pissed actually, but at the same time, I was, like I said, I was hoping that we would pull it out because, you know, me being a senior, being one of the leaders, like, had we not won, a lot of that blame was going to be dealt my way.
Got it. Got it, team.
So, Mr. Ewan, let's really take it down Tobacco Road for a second, man, because we're talking about Krzyzewskiville. We're talking about Cameron Indoor Stadium. We're talking about the Cameron Crazies. And in your rise during those early to mid-2000s, we're talking Jay Williams, Seldon Williams, Mike Dunleavy Jr. We're talking about Carlos Boozer. We're talking about J.J. Redick. And the list goes on with countless pros, including yourself and professionals. What is the pressure that comes associated with playing as a Duke Blue Devil?
You asking the wrong person that question, man, because I come from a winning situation, right? In high school, being the way we had to come up in high school, you know, make a name for ourselves, being a Texas, you know, being guys from Texas, having to make a name for ourselves and earning a name for ourselves and becoming nationally known and ranked number two in the country. And so going to Duke for me was just kind of like an extension or a continuation of trying to continue winning. Mm-hmm. And so, granted, yes, pressure, because every night you're on TV, everybody wants to beat you. At that time, back in those days, Duke was the most hated. You know, if you weren't a Duke fan, like, you was the most hated school in college basketball. You understand? So,
right.
So yeah, I mean, you know, if you weren't used to that type of atmosphere, or you weren't used to those type of situations or pressure, it could be a lot. It could be a lot. But like I said, I was prepped for this, man, since I was a little kid. So, man, it was no sweat for me, honestly.
Most definitely. Well, let me continue along the same pathway then, Mr. Ewing. We had some Tar Heels on earlier last season, Rashad McCants, David Noel, and we talked about the authenticity and the uniqueness of that Duke-Carolina rivalry. Talk about your first time you was in one of those games, and what is it like to be a part from now your perspective? At least I like where this is going already. Talk to
me. All right, so the first part, you said my first experience in the Duke-Carolina game. So when I first got to my freshman year, right, Carolina was some trash. And it's not me bashing Carolina. Like, if you go back and look at that, you know what I'm saying, that 2001-2002 season, Carolina was some trash. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, they had a killer on their team by the name of Joe Forte.
Yes, sir.
And then you gotta give props to Julius Peppers, who was a dual sport athlete. But other than that, after that, man, that team was a horrible Carolina team. So my first experience wasn't much of a rivalry. It wasn't much of a rivalry, to be honest. Like, we smashed those guys. I think we played them three times that year, because we actually played them in the ACC tournament also. So
yep.
We ran through those guys easy that year. My sophomore year is when I think stuff started to change a little bit. The rivalry was getting back on track. I think that's when guys like Rashad McCants, Sean May, that's when that group of guys for Carolina came in, David Noel, that's when that group of guys for Carolina came in. So things got back on track our sophomore year. And then my junior, senior year, obviously, like, you know, they wanted our senior year. So our junior year, we was in the Final Four. So, yeah, I mean, so the last 2 years for sure was, you know, like I said, sophomore year was, yeah, like I said, it got back on track that sophomore year. But to answer the second part of your question, man, about how would I describe that? You can't describe it, honestly. Like, you have to experience, you have to actually be there to experience. I can't do it no justice of trying to put words on that type of atmosphere and that experience between those two teams.
Right. My final question before I kick it back to Kev, you're a floor general, you're a point guard, you're extension to the head coach. What type of pressure is that from the legendary, iconic Hall of Fame coach, Coach Mike Krzyzewski?
It's a lot, man, because, I mean, coach is demanding. He's going to hold you accountable. And at the same time, you playing in the ACC, one of the best conferences. Well, at the time, when I was in school, the best conference in college basketball.
Right.
You're going up against a lot of good dudes every night. And so on top of, you know, handling your responsibilities that you got to do for your team, you're also trying to perform individually and outdo your opponent, your matchup. So man, yeah, it could be tough, but like at the same time, it prepares you for what you're trying to accomplish and what you're trying to do. And I mean, what he's done over his years speaks for itself of why we've had such a great program and why we're able to produce the type of players and pros that we produce and you know, and guys who had great college careers.
Absolutely. Right, Kat.
You talk about Coach K being tough on you and all these other players. And obviously that's something that we're going to see in the practices, not necessarily while he's on the sidelines. You know, it's coaches are always like that. They're one way in practice, and on the sidelines, it's totally different.
Yeah.
So I know some of the coaches I've played for, they're rowdy and foul mouth. And then on the sidelines, you'd never know the difference. Would you say Coach K was that way? And if so, you got any funny tidbits that you could share?
Coach K is definitely, now mind you, I mean, if you know Coach K's background, you already know the answer to this. But Coach K comes from Bob Knight.
Bob Knight, yep.
So, I mean, we all know Bob Knight's history. And
absolutely.
Coach K is not even close to that extreme of what Bob Knight has done or stuff he's done in his career. But like I say, he's an extension of the Bob Knight discipleship. So, and, you know, a West Point guy. So, yeah, I mean, you see the professional, most of the time you're going to see the professional, well-kept, you know, mild-mannered coach on the sideline, you know, on TV. But like I say, in practice, man, coach lets you have it. Yeah, he got some choice words for you in practice, man. And you know, it behind the scenes, it can go down.
Okay, that's what's up. My last question for you, sir. It's a recent video that showed up on YouTube. It shows yourself and your old high school teammate, TJ Ford, shooting threes in the gym, ball getting shot back at you. My question, sir, is who won?
Is that really a question? Nah. That can't be really a question, man. That's my guy. But honestly, I'm not sure. I think I won it. Like I said, we were just messing around. Anytime we get in the gym, man, and I don't even think we was actually competing at first. It just so happened it turned into that. And somebody, you know, we had somebody in there with the camera, you know, just trying to get some footage. So, but yeah, anytime we get in the gym, man, the ball started bouncing, it ended up turning into some type of competition.
That's what's up. Yeah, T.
Mr. Junior, I got a few more questions for you before we let you go. So you being a floor general at Duke University, and there's been so many prominent ones that have come from Duke as well. What was that like as well? Have you ever thought about that? Like, you know, you was one of the ones that came from a long legacy of prominent Duke point guards. What's that like for you as well, being a part of that that part of the legacy?
I mean, it's an honor, man. Especially considering, I mean, if you really follow my college career, I had a tough transition I had to make. So I played off the ball all of my life, right? Up until my senior year. Like you said, Chris Duhon, who had been our floor general for 3 years. Well, you know, when I was there for 3 years, I played with Chris for 3 years. You know, Sean Livingston, a pure point guard who we were expecting to come in as a freshman recruit, he decided, you know, to skip college and go to the league. So that left us with, you know, with bare minimum at the point guard position with myself and Sean Dockery. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, for whatever reason, the coaches thought it would be best for me to kind of make that transition my senior year. And like I said, for me, it was tough because I had prepared my mind mentally for like, okay, it's my senior year. I'm going to get my shots here. I knew where I was going to get my shots at. And, my, you know, I knew my scoring opportunities off the ball at playing two guard. So when we go into training camp and, you know, I had to sit down with coach and he's like, yeah, man, I think it'd be best for us for you to handle the ball a lot more this year and, you know, and kind of play more of a point guard role. I was like, I wasn't for it, you know, you know, I'm like, man, it's my last year. Like, right. I'm trying to put up a dub plus, you know, and make sure to guarantee me one of these, you know.
A lottery slot.
Yeah, lottery slot or, you know, guarantee me the first round pick, right? So, for me, it was tough, man, having to make that transition then. But ever since then, once I left college, I got to the NBA and kind of got back in that kind of more so the two guard role. But then I got labeled as a guy who supposedly supposed to be able to play point guard. But I had only played point guard for 1 year. So they were saying the obvious, like, oh, yeah, well, Daniel Ewing is not really a point guard. Well, yeah, I wasn't. You know, I had never really played the point guard. And then trying to say, you want me to become that at the highest level?
Yeah.
And I'm not getting those reps in that, you know. So it was, like I said, it was difficult. But to be in that category as one of the ones, as you say, as a guy that come from Duke, man, that's a great honor because it's a lot of great guys, you know, that put on that uniform and strapped it up throughout the years.
Definitely. Speaking of your transition, Mr. Ewan, as I conclude, get ready to wrap this up for you. You came from a winning program, a winning situation. You've been in Final Fours, ACC championship, ACC regular season titles and everything. And then you get drafted and you go to the Clippers. How did you mentally, not only once draft night is concluded, prepare yourself for that transition? And what was that like? How did you able to, because we know at those days, the Clippers were really trying to figure themselves out and get it together, man. So what was that like for you?
Man, it was two of the best years of my life as far as the experience.
Right.
Just making it to the NBA, being in the NBA, getting to, you know, play and go up, you know, compete against some of the best guys ever to strap them up, you know, But also knowing where I come from, like you said, coming mm-hmm. from you, coming from high school, man, it was horrible, right? Like I said, for, and honestly, like it was a bad, like for me, it was a dream and a curse. Mm. It was a dream I got drafted, right? Mm-hmm. Dream I got drafted, the team believed in me, they drafted me. Mm-hmm. The curse was, like you said, everybody back then, the Clippers was one laughing stock of the NBA.
Yeah.
Right? So the curse was I'm going to a team that's, you know, organization, not necessarily a team, I'm going to an organization that's not used to winning, that don't really have anything in place to develop young guys. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it wasn't the best situation as far as preparing me to make a career in the NBA.
Right.
Well, to be fair, I just want to interject for 1 second. Your first year, if I'm not mistaken, your Clippers did make the playoffs. And I think second round, you lost to the Suns, if I'm not mistaken. Now, Suns are nothing to sneeze at that particular time. Nash was an MVP that season. They had guys like Sean Marion, Rajah Bell. So they were nothing to sneeze at. So to say that the first year, now second year is another story. There was a significant dip there.
But no, like I said, I try to clarify by saying the organization. Like
okay.
They didn't have things in place. It was, you know, they didn't have the winning mindset. They wasn't used to winning. And so, my first year we had a great team. You know, we had a great team, veteran guys. Like I said, we should have actually been playing in the Western Conference Finals. But you know, some things happened and we let that slip out of our hands. But yeah, I mean, we challenged a great Phoenix Suns team with Steve Nash, MVP that season. Demar Stoudemire, like the guys you name. Yeah, so we had a great team. Like I said, we just came up short in that series. But overall, from an organizational standpoint, yeah, it wasn't the best situation for a guy like me, who was trying to find his way.
It wasn't a winning culture is what you're getting at.
Not even that. Like I said, just for a guy like me in the situation I was in, I had got the label of, you know, of needing to be a point guard, proving that I need to be a point guard. And I wasn't that at the time. So, you know, it was tough.
Definitely. I don't think people realize, Mr. Ewing, like yourself, there's so many different guys that reinvent and have a strong overseas EuroLeague professional career across the water and do some things to dominate. I want to ask you this, because you play a lot of great basketball domestically from high school to college to professionally with the league. What was the difference in transitioning from playing in the States, going overseas? What were some of your biggest adjustments? And is it true what they say that the game is so much more physical overseas than what we're used to here in the U.S.?
It is a lot more physical overseas. It's a slower paced game, right? Okay. And so it's more so like the college game. It's very much like the college game as opposed to it being to like the NBA game. Okay. Now, nowadays, they might be more alike now because the game has evolved so much, even mm-hmm. like here domestically and internationally, like both styles have kind of taken a little bit from each other. And it's kind of just merging into like one style of basketball. But, you know, 10 years ago, yeah, it was much different playing overseas than it was playing in the NBA. But the biggest adjustment, man, honestly, is being able to mentally stay into it. Right. Right. It's just so much. It's so much BS goes on overseas that you wouldn't believe. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you just see and hear about guys getting bread or having a good season. You know, you see the fruits of their labor, but it's a lot going to that, man. When you're across that water, whatever country you're in, to get through the season, man, it's a whole lot. So mentally, man, you gotta really have your head on straight to get through some of the BS that you gotta go through just to get through the season.
Got you. Two quick questions and we'll wrap. So, you know, post-playing days, Mr. Ewing, you've been doing some great things. And we understand that, you know, health is wealth and health is paramount. You got your thing going in terms of your company, what you're working on right now. Tell us a little bit about that and what got you in that mind space to start and be a part of something so prolific.
Well, man, like for me, man, I really, when I have been thinking about transition like the past 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the last 3 years, I kind of was in transition. So I had I finished my last full season in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Told myself I was taking a year off in 2018, you know, but I still wanted to play. I just didn't like the situations that I was, you know, that I was getting my way. 2019, I was like, you know what? It don't look like stuff gonna get better. So I was preparing to actually retire. I ended up getting a call to finish the season for a team in Romania. One of the best situations of my career, even though it was just half the season. And then after that, I was like, okay, I got to end things on my terms. Mm-hmm. I'm good. I'm ready to, you know, move on. And so, after that season, I officially was like, I'm done. I'm not looking for no other jobs. You know, I ain't work, you know, so I'm trying to figure out what I'm gonna do next. What's the next chapter? And so, obviously a lot of people thought like, hey man, you're gonna coach, you know, something with basketball, which would be great. Mm-hmm. But it's just about the opportunities that present themselves to you that, you know, until you get those opportunities, you can't really do certain things. So this opportunity to work with this sports nutrition company came about with one of my former teammates from overseas, man, Tommy Adams. Shout out to Tom T.A. He reached out to me, man, out the blue and was like, hey, bro, I know you know, you're still transitioning. You're trying to figure out what you're trying to do. He's like, I have an opportunity for you. It might not be what you really want to do, but, you know, here it is. He broke it down to me. He's like, if you're interested, man, you know, I'll put you in the door, you know, for you to get the interview and you can go from there. And so, man, he put me down. I went through the interview process, man, and just so happened I landed the job with, you know, an up-and-coming sports nutrition company, mm-hmm. by the name of Ready Nutrition. We're all natural ingredient products that we sell, no zero added sugar. So we're trying to get on that space with your Gatorades and your body armors. And it's also backed by Giannis Antetokounmpo and Aaron Donald. Both have skin in the company. So they both put their own money up in the company. So it's be on the lookout for that, man. Like I said, they haven't done much marketing about it for it yet, but it's coming real soon.
Well, listen, if you need a show sponsor, we got season 6 coming real soon, live from LA. So we can talk later. Appreciate you.
Hey
listen, Mr. Ewing, it's been a great time having you a part of the Stoop. But before we go, we always got to hit him like this. If you could put together, and we only giving you a 10-man roster of your all-time greatest Dukies, your all-time best Blue Devils, oh, he looking up already. Who would they be? You got a 10-man roster, and you 10? The coach. Yeah, you got 10.
I could just name 10. I don't got to put
10. No position, no nothing. Right. Just give me 10 guys.
All right. Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, Jay Will, Johnny Dawkins, Elton Brand. What's that? 6? Am I 6?
Yeah, you got 6.
Elton Brand, Zion.
Ooh. Got 3 left.
7. Try to make sure I can't miss. All right, Jay Will. Zion. Gotta go with Zion. This is tough. JJ. I can't. All right, JJ.
Yeah, about to say.
JJ. Yeah, I got it. JJ. Sheldon Williams. I'm gonna go with my guy Shell. So that's 9.
Last one. Now this is college because some of these guys,
right. This is college. It's college. Man, that last one tough, man. Just off pure talent, this is not my 10th guy, I don't think, but off pure talent, I would go with a guy like Kyrie, but he ain't played but 11 games.
Yeah, see, like I said,
so I can't really say Kyrie for college. Bagley tore it up in college, man.
Yeah,
Marvin. God, dog. Then you got Jason Tatum, and
yeah, but that Jason Tatum ain't today's Jason Tatum.
Right, you're right.
Today's Brandon Ingram ain't today's Brandon Ingram.
You're right. Yeah, I'm
Marv
gonna go.
Marv got busy.
I'm gonna go with Marv, man. With that last spot.
I might say. Booz and Corey Maggette got busy too, though, in their collegiate career, especially Booz.
I played with Booz.
Right.
And Booz definitely, he got robbed by not being a first round pick, you know, but he made him pay in the long run with that. But you got Booz, Christian Laettner, EB.
Yeah.
Who, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, who you go with?
Yeah.
You feel me?
That's a tough one.
And then you throw in like Zion. So, you know, if you're going to say, if we talking about 4, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's, I mean, that's, it's so like you're always gonna leave somebody. I just tried to name some guys that I definitely didn't want to leave out, like Johnny Dawkins. The first three I named was the three guys that got me watching you. So exactly. So I had to get the OG in with Johnny Dawkins, Jay Will.
Let me do this. Let me give you five spots honorable mention. Let me get you five honorable mentions real quick. Go ahead.
Five honorable mentions. So I go with Booze, Dunleavy Jr., Luau, guy like Nolan Smith.
Dang, there we go.
Now I got to go with another OG. I go with Jeff Capel.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a great episode of The Stoop. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Ewan, for being a part. Also, Mr. Ewan, is there any way where we can support? Can you tell our viewers and listeners where they can be able to get the energy our products right now by chance?
You can go to teamready.com. You can go to teamready.com and place your order. Or you can reach out to me personally and DM me or whatever. Let me know if you want to place an order. We can do it that way for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Once again, well, we wish you all the best in your post-retirement things, man. We wish you best health and make sure that you and your family's good as we conclude and get wrapped up with this pandemic. And thank you so much for being a part of Stoop tonight.
All good, fellas. I appreciate y'all having me on, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. For my guy, Kev P, this has been another great episode of The Stoop. We'll catch you next time.